Hey everybody, happy Sunday. And we're going to do a couple different podcasts today. I don't know. I might upload this one here in a couple days or a day. I don't know. Anyways, you'll get it when you get it. But it's Hunting Out Loud with Rob and Cody, and today we're going to sit down with Mark Elkins and listen, you're going to get some good info today. Mark, man, he's on top of the thing. He's got a wealth of knowledge when it comes to hunting. He's into duck hunting, deer hunting, bear hunting, just about everything. But right off the bat, let's talk about waterfowl hunting, Mark. I mean, I like to talk about it because I don't know anything about it. And so I can't ever share anything with my listeners or the followers on here about it. But right off the bat, I was just curious about training your dogs and your labs as a pup, from choosing a lab to as a pup to taking him to the field. What would you say if I wanted to go out and just get a pup and start training him? I guess what I'm trying to say.
Well, I've had a several yellow chocolates, blacks. So I've had several labs. I've got a fondness for yellow Labradors, and they do outstanding. I've got online and got a lot of stuff from DU, Ducks Unlimited, and they have training videos and kind of help you along from the starter to the professional. I don't think you need a dog, in my opinion, that does these field trial championship runs. I like a dog that's just a practical dog. It does what I want it to do. I shoot a duck, I want the dog to retrieve it. That's bird in the water, bird in hand. That's, to me, that's the most important. And if I can teach a dog to do those things, really, that's it. I mean, I don't need him to do big blind retrieves and stuff. And there's educational training on that, online. You can find it about anywhere. But to me, it's just been practical.
So, for me, someone that doesn't waterfowl hunt, but I'm a hunter, so I want to do all kind of hunting. It's always been my back of my mind to hunt, and I'm sure there's a lot of you out there that don't do it. I've had people like yourself, Mark, say don't do it because once I do, I'm in trouble. I'm gonna be spending every dollar I have because it's an addiction, I guess.
It's expensive. It really is. That's why my wife, she's like, you, last thing you need is another habit, and you never have to worry about getting mixed up with drugs or alcohol because you can't afford it after you start duck hunting.
You're done when you duck hunt. I've heard that. I heard it's bad, but I'm gonna do it.
No, since Duck Dynasty, it's kind of everybody's a duck hunter now. Every time you turn around, there's somebody standing in your water hole.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, and I was ranting on earlier. I went live earlier about stuff, and you had mentioned Duck Dynasty, and just before that, I had asked you about how would I train a lab or a dog for waterfowl, and you said go to YouTube. That's where you have to go to get information anymore, to get the honest information. And it's sad that you can't turn on Outdoor Channel or Hunt Channel. I'm not saying they're all like that. I'm not saying all the hunt shows are like that. And I'm not bashing them because I know they're doing what they have to do. But they're not representing the hunting, the outdoors, I feel like it should be. Like I was talking about earlier, when I was young, I watched Roger Ragland, Night and Hail, 20 years ago. Those guys were hunting and they was teaching me something. There was information. And now it's just, I'm gonna kill a big old buck. Look what I killed with these broadheads and this camo. You gotta have it. I mean, it's like a damn circus. And we have a lot of kids watching that, and it just gets on my nerves. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Am I wrong?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it's just a marketing scam. I mean, everything from the even the waterfowl training. There's some water dog shows on Outdoor Channel and some of the outdoor networks. And it's just a, hey, buy my product, your dog will do this. Your dog's not going to do any of those things. Go to YouTube and sit down and watch someone that's doing practical exercises with their dog. It's the simplest things of teaching your dog, and they'll teach you those mechanics about how to get your dog to do certain things. Now, to get advanced, it requires a little more, but I could in 2 months teach a chicken to go pick up an ear of corn if I wanted it to, but
Right.
I can take a dog in 2 months, I can teach that dog to go pick up a duck, but and deer hunting the same way. I mean, these guys are trying to sell there's such a market on it. Now they're trying to sell a product. It's not about really educating someone about how to hunt, because these guys are not really hunters. They're, you know, they've gotten to the point that they're just advertisements. You know, buy my deer scent, buy my broadhead, buy this, and they've, everybody's labeled them. So, you know, they're not really, they go to private ranches to hunt. They don't, you know, not like us. You and I, we go out, we scout a place, we look it up and down. We don't have anybody doing that for us. We're doing it on our own.
Right.
You know, and that's what I've taught my son, you know, like you've had your kids. You've taught them how to do those things, how to go out. And I've taught my son how to train his own dog, you know.
Right.
And if I depended on the guy on TV, I'd be lost. I wouldn't know what to do.
And I guess that's what I'm saying, because the Outdoor Channel, these bigger networks that have these hunting shows on, they're representing outdoors. Now, if you know what I mean, for people, for these younger kids, we need hunters in the woods more now than ever, in my opinion. And I just don't think they're representing the right way. Now, I have nothing against anyone going out there and using outfitters. I know a lot of people use outfitters. I want to go on a bear hunt. I'm going to use outfitter, and I'm going to be damn proud if I kill me a bear at that outfitters. But here's the thing. I'm not a professional bear hunter. You know what I'm saying? That you get pro staff. Now, football players, NFL football players, they're dickheads. We know that. And the basketball players, NBA basketball players, Major League Baseball players, they're professionals. You have to be good. You can't suck and just buy your way to be a professional there. But in the hunting industry nowadays, you don't have to be a good hunter to be a professional, so-called professional. You know what I'm saying? It's promotional. That's all it is.
It is. It's a pretty face. It's a guy that has the right personality to talk on, you know, on camera. There's more to it than, you know, actually getting out there and doing it. You know, I mean, I, like you said, I bear hunted. I've taken a bear and I used a guide.
Yeah. You
know, I love to travel.
And I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking outfitters. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about.
I didn't buy the $10,000 program because I'm not the $10,000 program guy. Yeah. I'm the $1,500 guy. Yeah. You know, all I asked for was the opportunity. The guy put me in the opportunity, and I seized the moment.
But, yeah.
But you know, I couldn't afford to go on a Jim Shockey hunt that cost $20,000, and he's going to guarantee you a 1,000-pound grizzly bear. It's just not in my budget. So.
No, and mine either. If I could, I'd probably do it. And I'm not knocking people using outfitters. I don't want anyone to take this wrong. It's nothing about using outfitters. I'm just trying to say, for the everyday average outdoorsman, for the millions of us that watch TV, it's unrealistic. When you run and you're going to an outfitter, blasting a deer, a big old buck, you're not teaching anyone anything. The Drury brothers, they still do. Now, they've managed their land. I think Lee and Tiffany, I like watching them. They kill monster bucks, but they've managed their land, and they kind of try to teach you something. I like the informational shows, and we're old school, Mark.
Right.
And that's just the way I feel about it.
You know, Lee and Tiffany, they do. They hunt a lot of their own land, and they advertise that. Hey, we lease these farms, but they farm too. They also, or they used to. I don't know if they still do, but they used to do a lot of agricultural farming. In my opinion, that's what they did. And they didn't sell camouflage, and they didn't sell a product and then go hunt, you know, because I used to kid all the time, you know, these guys, they'd say, hey, I'm here with my good friend, an outfitter. You know, you never met that guy. He was never your good friend until you become a celebrity in the outdoor world. And then, wait, now he's your good friend, and you're down there hunting with him on his Texas ranch and killing 180-inch deer.
Right.
You know, that, I mean, I'm not saying that good for them.
Yeah, good for them,
But you don't, I don't need that guy teaching me the concepts of deer hunting.
He's not teaching you.
Yeah.
And all he's doing is then you have these kids or these people, you know, a 15, 16-year-old kid, a 40-year-old man killing his first deer, maybe killing a 2-year-old buck. Who cares? And people, you should have let that. You should have let that buck grow. Now, Mark, we hunt mature bucks, but I guarantee you, and we didn't talk about this when you come on here, but I guarantee you, and I've known you for a long time, if you've seen some 40-year-old man, 16-year-old kid with a basket rack buck, you're going to go right over and pat him on the back and say congratulations. But the, you know, people are unrealistic about things. People come up at a different pace now, but with these hunting shows the way they are, I think everybody feels like you got to kill a 150-inch deer. There's not that many people consistently killing deer like that. You know that.
there's not. You know, I'm the guy that goes out and of course, you know, I've gotten into the over the years to actually have a place to hunt where you can hunt 150, 60
yeah,
inch
that's
deer.
Great.
You know, we've leased up 2 big tracts of land so that we can manage them, even though it's hard to do because you have a lot of trespassers and road hunters and people that'll do anything to shoot one. I mean, they're just murderers, you know. But
yeah,
we liked having a place that we could call our own and that we could feed and do minerals and walk the 3.5-year-old deer so we could have the 5.5-year-old deer.
Right,
you know?
To have those big bruisers. And that's what it takes.
1,100 acres, and we harvested one deer off of it last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, we kind of get a count of how many deer we see, and we run 7-8 cameras all the time, and so we like to know what's going on.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that's what it's all about when you have your own land stuff. I mean, there's all ways of hunting, different ways of hunting, and I don't know why I get ranting going on about it. Just pissing me off. I get up there watching a hunting show, and someone's throwing Tink 69 at me or something like that before the deer's even, you know, he's still warm down there. I mean, come on, go down there and celebrate first. I mean, celebrate and grab that rack and be excited, yell, scream, whatever you want to do before you start, like you said, it's like NASCAR driver. I mean, you guys might as well just get 20 hats when you kill a deer and start putting them on and doing different, you know, on and on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know enough about editing to know that all these things occur and they build this projection of what they want you to see.
Oh, yeah.
But all these events took place over days, you know.
That, oh, yeah.
That those videos and hey, we're going to pour this out on the ground and the deer are just going to come in like a bunch of maniacs, you know. We're going to pick the one we want to shoot. And if you buy this product, they're going to run in on you like that. And that's not true. That's
it ain't going to happen. And I'm not going to sit there and knock these products, but you know as well as I do about, you know, I don't know if you listened the other day. I was talking about deer piss of all things, deer urine. I don't use it. But, you know, I thought, I'm just going to study up on it before I start bashing it. Well, then I kind of studied up on it. And a lot of different things make sense about the deer urine and stuff like that. But you just don't know what you're getting out there.
I never used it. I never used it for an attractant as much as I did as a cover.
Right.
To try to disguise myself. And my dad, you know, he's 80 years old. And he had told me he had drug a rag through the woods and he had a spiked buck follow him all the way to his tree. And in reality, I'm sure that really happened, you know.
I believe that.
Yeah, but it's a spiked buck. You know, I didn't have no 5.5-year-old deer follow me
no.
in the tree. You know?
Well, we know how their nose are.
Yeah. And they're walking on pins and needles all the time.
Yeah.
They're nervous wreck, it seems like, unless you're in the rut. And then they're kind of, you know, they're reckless at that point. But like I told my son, you know, he always wants to go climb up on the edge of the field and hunt the edge of the field. And I get that. I do it some myself.
That's where I was when I was young.
And I said, you know, I said, here's the thing you have to remember about big mature bucks. I said, they come to the edge of the field and they stand there in the brush for 10 or 15 minutes. And they look every aspect of that over. They don't just recklessly run in the field.
No.
Unless it's the rut. I said, early season, September. They ease into those things. They ease into like acorn ridges. I like to hunt white oak acorn ridges, and they troll around through there, and you won't even know they're there, and they're 10 steps from you, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're easing along.
And you can bet your butt, they're gonna have the wind in their favor before they come to that acorn flat, before they come into that field. So you guys out there, you know, you may be getting some big bucks on your cams right now. You may be seeing them in the field where you're seeing them at. I'm telling you right now, you're probably not going to kill him right there. You're going to have to get him in a different spot and get that wind in your favor. You know what I'm talking about, Mark. Them deer, those big bucks, they're going to have the wind in their favor coming into that field. Say, like your son or other people that's in these fields, seeing these big bucks, maybe getting pictures of them right now. You know, beware of that wind because he knows that wind. Like you said, he's not recklessly coming into that field or wherever he's coming just for the heck of it.
I'll give you a perfect analogy of that. About 4 years ago, I had this buck that he was coming into a feeder. And I'd had this feeder going, you know, for 20 years. It's been the same feeder. And I don't necessarily hunt over it all the time, but I hunt it some. And I kept getting pictures of this buck, the way the camera was facing. I'd get him coming in at facing the camera. And I kept thinking, golly, he's going to be so easy to kill because I'm going to get here. And that rascal was coming in. And when he was coming in, he was circling that feeder every time, almost a 360, probably 300 degrees of it, going completely around it, and then coming back in. He circled that, not a small circle, a huge circle.
Right.
So he would come off the flat above me and walk all the way around. And he was, that was just his, you know, he was checking for danger as he came into that area. And I, you know, that was probably 5 or 6 years ago, really. Yeah. I thought, you know, how many times have I guessed from the photograph that deer always comes in that way? And I didn't think, well, he circled this,
yeah,
this location to check it. He knew there was food here.
And that's what I'm saying, getting directly, you know, that's what you're saying, getting directly over top of that hot sign or the food source that you're hunting, getting right over top of it. You better get maybe on the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Utilize these cameras. They're pretty cheap these days. It doesn't matter which one you get, unless you watch TV, then get whatever they're using. But anyways, and like you're talking about that deer, I'd killed a good buck here, big mature buck, not long ago. And I took him early season, and he was with another buck. And the other buck he was with, probably 3.5-year-old. But the 3.5-year-old was real cautious. I mean, he was a cautious buck. I mean, he's freaking out over everything for whatever reason. You know, he was just one of those bucks.
Right.
And the bigger buck, actually, he wasn't paying much attention to anything. They'd come in the first time that I'd seen them. And I had to relocate because things just wasn't right there, and I knew I wasn't going to kill him. But when I relocated, that smaller buck had come in, the cautious one. And there was a white oak flat. There's like just two big white oaks dropping. And there wasn't a lot of white oaks that year, so it was one of those years where you get on the acorns and you might have a chance. You know what I'm saying? So I sat right up on top of the acorns within 30 yards, tried to get skirted a little bit. Well, I see the younger buck, the 3.5-year-old buck. He comes about 100 yards around, like you're talking about on your feeder. He makes a big circle around this acorn flat, and he comes all the way behind me, probably 100 yards, and he busts me, that young one, and he's gone. So, but the big buck, for whatever reason, wasn't with him that day. It's early season, September. So I moved all the way over to where I seen him come on that line, or the line he used. I moved on that line. I'm not kidding you. 2 days later, I killed that monster buck, and he was using that same line. So that younger buck got him shot because I seen what he was doing. But had I stayed right on top of the food source, like you was talking about, on top of your feeder, then bucks they're not going to die. You know what I mean? So pay attention to that, you know.
Well, you know, everybody talks about patterning deer, and that's what I try to do. I try to pattern the deer to see when they're coming in. You know, if I have a buck come into a spot on Monday, he'll usually come in there Tuesday and Wednesday. He'll come in there 2 or 3 days back to back. That seems like they vanish, you know,
for a couple of weeks maybe.
Yeah, sometimes up to a couple of weeks. And then you know, I killed a double drop time buck back 5 or 6 years ago, and with an archery kill on video, and we had a friend of mine, Mike Grubb. He was, and you know Mike as well.
Yeah.
He's a young guy. He's a lot younger than me. I graduated with his dad, so you know he's considerably younger than me. And so we were in a set. You know, we knew where this deer was at, and we were in a set. And this double drop time comes in, and we're watching him, and he's got another buck with him. And then while we're watching him, he's still 40 yards out in the brush, but we're getting some video of him. This other buck comes above us. I mean, on a flat eye level with us, 15 yards, and we're not really paying attention to him, and then we hear him stomp, and we look over, and this 10 point standing there, you know, eyes full of us, and we've blown it.
Right.
Well, he blows, everything just busts out of there, and so we talk, and I said, let's just get down. There's 30 minutes left in the evening. Let's just get down, let him have it. And he said, we'll let it rest a couple of days or a few days. I said, no, I'm coming back here tomorrow.
Right.
I said, the 10 point busted us, but that double drop time, he didn't have any idea. He just ran because everybody else ran.
He didn't know what was going on.
So I know where he's coming from.
Right.
So we go get in the same set, and we were sitting watching this old clear cut road, you know, that come off the hill where the buck come from the day before. And I thought, well, certainly, you know, he's going to come right back down here again if he does. So probably the last 45 minutes to hour before dark, fawn comes to off that same trail to our left, 15 yards from us on that high bank.
Mm-hmm.
Here he comes, right behind it.
Oh, my goodness.
Walks, I mean, he's 15 yards from us, you know.
Right.
All those days we had seen him come down. We had video cameras, you know, watching him. And the here he stands 15 yards to my left.
Uh-huh.
But he walks right on by. We sat still. You know, Mike had tapped me and said, hey, don't move, don't move. And that buck walked right by. And he goes out and we video shooting him. And it's just a great, it was my, probably my greatest moment in the tree stand with my own personal kill. But my greatest is with my kid, you know, my son.
Oh, man, that's fun right there.
It is.
I mean, that's hunting. That's what hunting's supposed to be about. All you guys listen, all you everyday average outdoorsmen and women just like ourselves, you know, just don't let those numbers take the fun out of it. I mean, I measure my deer and stuff like that, but just have fun. Those experiences right there is what it's all about. And now, Mark, that buck was a dandy. I've seen that buck, and I might share a picture on this podcast of that buck.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Now, years ago, before all the bull crap was going on TV and all the big numbers and stuff, nothing wrong with it. I'm not knocking you all, but I don't know how long ago there was a 32-point buck that you all found close to your house.
Yeah.
Now, first, that thing was poached, right?
We found it. We found it. We smelled it first, and then we found it. And then we in our ignorance, because we were not familiar with it, we just saw the antlers off. You know, not – we actually saw the skull cap off. But, yeah, he was a – you've seen him. You know, he was in velvet. He was poached early, still had grow and do. He had drop times on him close to the place where I killed my buck at.
Right.
And you know where it is, where it's located.
Right.
I own a farm there. My dad has a farm there. So, but yeah, we found him. I think I was 17.
Yeah.
That was 32 years ago.
You didn't hear bucks like that back then, because we didn't have the conversation. I can't even say conference. I was pissed off about all this other stuff. I can't even talk. But we just didn't. There was a lot of poaching going on back in those days, and you just didn't have the deer like we have now. I mean, if you go out now, you can find you some. I mean, I've already got 8 different bucks on cameras right here in Kentucky that I'd put on my wall. Back in those days, of course, we didn't have the cameras and stuff, but you didn't have the deer that you. You know, it was a big deal,
right?
That buck, and it, had he reached his potential, I mean, what do you think that buck would end up?
I think,
just to give people an idea by number,
I think they scored him a little over 200.
Uh-huh.
But I mean,
yeah, he
if
did.
He would have completed his growth, he would have. I think he would have 230s.
He would have been 230s easy.
And, you know, it's when you're 17-year-old boy, and, you know, you probably remember the day in Kentucky, and that, I don't know if you put that out there, but anyways. If you saw a deer when I was 12 years old, you went home and you told everybody.
Yeah.
Just seeing a deer, it didn't make any difference what kind it was.
Yeah.
Hey, I saw a deer, guys, and most people would say you were lying about it, because they were just so rare to be seen, you know.
And like I said, that's conservation, what I was trying to say.
Right.
And our money, hunters' money. I mean, that's where we brought it. You know, you hear that. I'm not going to get on the Anna hunters, because they had me all tore up about that damn giraffe. But
well, we were just starting to really develop a deer population in Kentucky, when in this part of Kentucky, when we found that deer,
yeah.
You know, and we had heard stories. This guy said he had shot it, and this guy said he had shot it, but it was not in season, no matter who shot it.
No matter, we didn't have early season back then, did we?
We originally kept going by, and we could smell the deer on the school bus. That's how young I was. So,
right.
So me and my cousin, we went down, and another boy, and they found it, and you know. The rest is history. That was a heck of a deer, you know. And,
oh my God!
And people, I mean, for hundreds of miles drove to look at that thing, you know, and they were amazed at what it was, and I've still got it.
And you know, that's awesome. And you was talking about the deer population just starting. Now you've seen it when it was nothing to where it is now. So you've seen what conservation has done in our little area right here. Now I can remember when there wasn't any turkeys around, and now. I live in the city. I kill a turkey in my backyard. So, yeah. You know.
Right. And you're right. Conservation's played a big role. And I think that, and I've told, I try to stay involved with my wildlife, the biologist in the state of Kentucky. And I think we're down. I think we've reached a pinnacle of our deer population. I think we're falling. You're seeing more city deer.
We are.
But where I live, you know, I can walk out on my porch and I could look out and see, I could count 20, 25 deer, you know, in my hay fields, my bottoms. And over the last 2 or 3 years, if I see 8, that's a big number.
Now, what would you think is the problem there with the numbers dropping? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I think Kentucky opened up too much $5 tag, too many $5 tags, kill them, kill them, kill them. You know, they wanted to get that. I think everybody had that optimum goal of let's kill one for one. Let's get a one for one deer ratio. So we're going to kill off all the does, you know, we can, and get the buck to doe ratio 1-to-1. I think that's a horrible number. You know, it's not realistic. I'd say 2-to-3-to-1 or something in that neighborhood. 2-to-3 does per buck would be a better number. But yeah, I'm not, even though Kentucky has done better with our growth and our trophy bucks, but I think that's more related to
down west
guys like you and I,
yeah,
who teach our kids, you know, shoot whatever you want to this time, but let's try to manage it. Let's get some growth in these deer. You tell your kids, you know, they've killed 3 or 4 small bucks. Let's wait for something bigger.
Yeah,
you know, and try to always do better.
And that's what I try to talk about when I'm talking about patting that kid on the back for shooting that smaller buck, and then letting him come out up at his pace. You know, no one's, you know, these kids. Like Gregory, I've told him, shoot, I don't care what it has on it, you can shoot it. But now he shot 6 or 7 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And on his own, he wants to wait on mature bucks. And that's a good thing. And that's another thing these hunting shows. I mean, a lot of kids, they may not have a parent or uncle or someone taking them hunting. That's the things they could be teaching, just trying to shove some product up their rear end. They could be teaching stuff like that and helping the hunting world, the outdoors world. You know what I'm saying? Now, go ahead, Mark.
It's good for your deer population, the growth. And, I mean, you'd kill a nice 100-inch 8-point. That was a big buck when you and I were young men.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't even get up off my couch to walk outside to look at a 100-inch 8-point unless a child killed it.
Right.
Somebody I knew had been hunting for 15 years done it, I'd be like, hey. You should have waited. He would have been better, you know.
And you're probably like me. It's a mature buck is what I mean. If it's 130-inch, I mean this buck right here.
I look at the body.
He's a 135-inch buck, and I knew that when I shot him. He was a 6-year-old buck,
right.
And that's what I was hunting.
And a lot of places around here, that's all you're going to find on a 6-year-old deer is 130-inch rack.
Yeah, and I'll tickle death with him as I was a 175-inch buck. Actually, he was older than that 175-inch buck. But anyways, now, last year, everybody was talking about the blue tongue or what the heck was it going
chronic
around here?
Wasting or was something.
I mean, I guess the deer here in Kentucky, I mean, they was getting wiped out. I thought it was blue tongue or some kind of gnat or something.
It was a gnat or something that got in their eye, I believe.
Yeah, got in their eye and then gave them an infection, their tongue swelled up or something like that. I mean, I guess that hurt the population some. Now, on my cameras, on my deer cameras, I never noticed any difference. But I guess around Boyd County area, people said they was dropping like flies. And
I saw, you know, over the years, I've seen a decline. And over the past 3 years, I've seen a decline. And I don't know that it's necessarily overhunting. It may be some overhunting with some overkilling. I'm not going to say overkilling with some disease involved. And I just think it's gotten a little lower in this area. Now, there were counties, I'd say Pike County, Kentucky, the number of deer they found in that area, which was already didn't have a great population, they found 500 or 600 confirmed.
Yeah.
You know, last year, that's a huge number of deer to knock out of the population.
Yeah, that's a big deal right there. And then, you know, last year you'd hear rumors about hunting season's going to be shortened or stuff like that. And I guess this year, it's the very next year, the season's longer and the bag limit's bigger. I don't know. It seems weird to me. I don't know. I'm not the biologist.
Yeah.
I don't know. But here's
I wonder who's counting. That's what does the counting? Because if they measure on, you know, on how many deer were killed, there's people out here I know that are killing 5, 6, 7 deer a year, you know.
Yeah.
And the way they've got this telecheck set up, and I hate it.
I don't like it.
I cannot stand it because it allows the guy that doesn't care, that's not conservative. He doesn't care about the population. He kills it and he can get it to his barn.
It's over.
It's done. I'm not checking it. The state knows nothing about it.
Yeah.
I'm not spending another $5 to, because he's processing the deer himself. And how many hundreds of times does that go on?
And that guy right there is shooting every buck he sees.
Every deer. It's brown, it's down. That's their philosophy. Yeah. I know them.
And you can tell a property. There's a property I had, and big bucks all the time. Now, all of a sudden, these bucks, I wasn't seeing them. I wasn't getting on cameras. I wasn't hardly getting pictures of them for 2 or 3 years. Well, lo and behold, someone gets busted for poaching in that area, and they're just now making it back. So that's how big a difference that can make. And it's an area that you would know about. But
right. Probably not many places here that I don't know. Because, you know, I'm like you. I've been hunting since I was 10, 11 years old. So
yeah,
we got on foot. We walked most places chasing squirrels, and we'd be gone for 8-9 hours at a time, you know.
Yeah,
all day long. So yeah, it's changed. I think, you know, and you have to deal with the change. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
I didn't like the telecheck. I still think it's the worst thing. Ohio just began that telecheck.
I know.
System.
I can't stand it. I like the fun of going to a check-in station on top of that. And I'm sure there's plenty of reasons why everything's about the dollars. But you know what? There was a good camaraderie. And you met a lot of people there. And you talked. And it was just fun going to that
station.
You got to
see those deer.
Yeah.
You know, like
it was good for the kids.
Right.
The young guys.
In Ohio,
women.
We'd take lunch and we'd go down and we'd eat. And the check station was right there, and we'd sit and we'd watch people come in. We'd get up from the table. You know, you'd see one coming in, like, holy cow.
That was a big deal. That was a big deal back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked up in Fort Kent, Maine, and their moose hunt, they would have to bring all this moose into a check-in station, and it was a big deal. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds of people there just to watch those moose come in, and that's kind of what we used to do back in the day. Now, I won't get on to one other thing, because I've never asked you about this or talked to you about it. And I know you're a big buck hunter. You know I'm into the early season deer hunting, the first 2 or 3 weeks of September. What do you hunt that, or do you kind of wait for the pre-rut and rut?
No, I definitely hunt the early season. I
love
archery hunt than pick up a gun at all. I did take my buck in Kentucky this year with the gun, but I would prefer to take one with a bow.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that come from Ohio and or from Florida that come up, and I put them in places. And but yeah, I much prefer the archery hunt. The only thing I don't like is the mosquitoes and the insects and the,
oh my gosh,
the ticks and all the things you have to deal with.
What are those? Are them those ticks? Are they? Hey, we got a new crowd coming in here. Next podcast coming up here soon. We're going to be bashing everybody. We're going to be fighting amongst each other. It's going to be fun.
We're probably going to call the police and get some handcuffs for this one guy.
You know that guy right there, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. I work with him.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. This is going to be good.
Never hunted with him. He won't invite me.
Oh, he won't?
No.
You didn't know he was going to be up here, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't know you'd invite him to your
Well, I don't know him. It's calling him. Are you?
How's that? Yeah.
Well, anyways, Kyle, you're going to have to talk to Mark about a few things. Edison Wise here coming up soon. He's got some footage and stuff. But anyways. Hey, we just talked. You're going to have to listen to this podcast.
I've got
he
one
talked
left.
All about it.
I've got one left.
It's your vision from his mom and dad.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to listen to this. But, shoot, where the heck was all the early season hunting? You know, I talked to Kyle and some other people about that early season hunting, and it seems to me like you can get away with a little bit more. Those first 2 or 3 weeks while they're in their sober patterns. I mean, you feel the same way?
I think, like me, I've already got 5 cameras in the field.
And oh, yeah.
I'm minerals out, and I know what the deer are doing. I've already got some decent pictures, some nice bucks, probably 100 and still in velvet, 135-inch 8-point.
I mean, some dandies, ain't
solid.
Man, he's going to be a dandy.
Solid 12-inch G2s. And he's a, you know, Personally, I wouldn't take him because I think he's a 3.5-year-old deer.
But, right.
Yeah. I think you can get a good pattern on them because they're still in those feeding habits. See?
Oh, man.
I think one of the hardest times to kill them is the rut because
they're
so unpredictable. I mean, they could be 5 miles away, you know, chasing does, you know, and somebody shoots them on property 5 miles away. I've seen it happen.
Now, you've done that yourself, I think. A few years ago, you had seen one on your property, end up killing it on your lease or vice versa.
Yep. At one point, I had a picture of him the evening before, and I killed him 1.3 miles away, the way a crow flies, at my stand. I couldn't believe it. When I walked down and looked at him, I thought, wow, that looks just like that buck I had on my place. And then I went back and started looking at pictures and looking at him. I cannot believe that he traveled that far.
And that just shows you right there during the rut, pre-rut, you know, just stay in the woods. I mean, you're not trying to pattern them anymore. I mean, that's why I like the funnels during the rut, because I know they're traveling, they're up on their feet. You know, if you can be in a funnel or a place like that, more likely he's trying to get to point A to point B as fast as he can, because he's doing what? He's doing the same thing we're doing. He's hunting them does. Of course, we're hunting him.
When I hunt the rut, I hunt where I see the most does.
Yeah.
Because that's where the most bucks are going to be at. They're going to be checking. They're going to be driving through those areas, checking, just looking.
Running through there.
And then they may come blazing through, because that doe, that's her territory.
Yeah.
She's probably not going to run halfway across the country. She's going to stay in that location. But she may go out and pick a buck up. My one of my best bucks ever was during the rut with the I had at one point I had 9 bucks and 1 doe standing underneath of me. Mm-hmm. And it was a pick your shot, you know, and this, the grunting, the roars and things, you know, you hear about on, you know, on these TV shows, you're thinking, you know, I seen it 20 years ago before they talked about it. And I'm just,
right.
But we didn't film things. So, you know, I'm sitting there just in total amazement and really shock. You know, you get buck fever when you got that much activity going on, you know, and I was an experienced hunter. And here this doe is. And I'm looking at all these bucks, and I'm trying to pick one to shoot, trying to pick the biggest one, and then this buck comes behind me, and he's the biggest one.
Right.
Walks under, I'm almost hits the ladder of my ladder stand.
Oh, golly.
And I'm just in shock.
Well, yeah.
Of course, I shoot him, and he was one of my top tens.
Yeah, that's a good memory right there, mm-hmm. No doubt. So just stick in the woods there during the rut, and you never know what might happen. Like I said, get where all the deer traffic is. I mean, deer leave sign. My God, you can find it. Just get out there and look for it. It's not that hard, and get in that spot, get the wind in your face, and go with it.
And I love to hunt. I mean, I hunt all the time. It's every opportunity I get that I'm not working, I try to get in a tree stand or be involved in the woods, you know, building food plots. I have food plots on my farm, and we keep corn out to make sure that they stay healthy through the year, and minerals and stuff. But even when I'm not hunting, I'm working to do something in the woods.
You know? Yeah. Well, Mark, we'll wrap this one up, I guess. See, 40 minutes. Seems like we've been talking for 5 minutes, does it not?
And I could talk forever.
I mean, we could come back up. I want you to come back up, and you can join us this next one if you want.
I don't even know if we're going
to
touch the bear hunting
part. We didn't even touch the bear hunting. But
we'll save that for another day.
We'll save it. And come back up anytime. And, you know, when deer season starts, I'd like to start, you know, putting more episodes out for people to try to help them keep up with what we're doing. That way it might help them, you know, implement things to do in their hunting and stuff like that, and help them out as season goes on. You know, a lot of people right now are just now getting pumped up and fired up and listening to it. So.
I will say this, some of the best deer that I've seen over the last 10 years have been what I call subdivision deer.
Yeah.
Deer that have moved into these subdivisions. And you can't gun hunt them, but you can archery them.
I know a couple of people do that, I think.
And I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I started in Columbus, Ohio. I started in Columbus, Ohio, noticing some deer that I'm talking about toads, man. I mean, absolute toads.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
See, I worked up
right there in the yard at Parsons. I mean, essentially, there's a neighborhood right across the street. And I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, they poached a 196.
Well, right here in the backyard. I mean, I see big bucks right here. My God. You know, of course.
Where I hunt at, they picked up a 192-inch deer last year on the same land that I hunt.
I mean, if they can get old, they can get big. That's what it takes. But anyways, hey, for Mark Elkins, it's Rob Mershon, and I'm hunting out loud with Rob and Cody. We'll talk at you later.